I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Every 5 minutes, someone dies while waiting for a compatible donor heart, liver, or kidney. On a remote island in Lake Superior, a team of geneticists strive to engineer an animal with human-compatible organs, thereby saving millions of lives. But these ancestors are not the docile herd animals they envision. Instead, the project spawns something big, something evil, something hungry. Ancestor by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm JJ.
Hey, guys, and I'm Kat.
And on this episode, we have the gang all back together. So we're super excited to interview Derrickson. He reached out to us not too long ago, and I was going through our emails to make sure we didn't miss anybody, and he was kind enough to jump on with us tonight. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. Big fan.
Aw, that's awesome. We love hearing that. Well, how did you find Real Hauntings?
Yeah, I just like to listen to scary stories in general, and some of the podcasts I found didn't feel like genuine. And then I forget which episode it came on, and it was just like the banter. I was like, okay, this is my vibe. I love this. Let me keep listening. And then it just kind of jumped around, and I was like, okay, let me get invested. And so I started from the beginning, and yeah, that's kind of how you guys became a part of my podcast world, and basically listen to you daily when I'm like exercising or go on my walks, just because it's like, I guess it's, I live vicariously through people because that's really the only way I can and I'll get into this later, but like being Native American or being Navajo specifically, it's kind of the only way I can is through other people's stories. So yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad that, we're able to provide some interesting stories for you. One of our favorite questions on the podcast to our guests is, on a scale of 1 to 10, the famous Believometer, where would you say you're on that scale in terms of how much you believe in ghosts?
You know, I was like, how would I answer this question? Because I knew it was going to be something. I guess for me, it's a 10, but it's because it's kind of built in to my culture. Like it's just a part of it. It's just something that's there. It's not a question as to if there's something else. There's something else in our belief system.
Well, I feel like there's like, I know just like a shamefully small amount about Navajo culture. So, you know, you mentioned growing up with this, concept of spirituality. So are there like any kind of specific tales that you grew up that had a really big impact on you?
So there's, and this is going to be different from each individual tribe. I can only speak from the Navajo perspective, but in terms of like the paranormal and spirits. It's very much like, I don't want to say taboo, but it's not spoken out at length. So there wouldn't be like, unless you're with like a healer or a traditional person who explains something to you, you don't sit around and talk about it, because there's this idea that if you talk about it, you bring it to you, like you're attracting it. And just the way Navajo beliefs, and if you're traditional, that is that you try to maintain a balance of your spirit. So you can't think about things too much into the negative part of your life. It puts you off balance, basically. So there's not a huge conversation about it, but when it does happen, it's usually in the context of getting a healing, getting some type of ceremony done. So I wouldn't say there's like stories that are talked about consistently, but there are like warnings, like what not to do to bring those things closer to you. But like things like not whistling at night, which I think goes, a lot of cultures have that. Making sure you're indoors before the sun's down, making sure windows are covered, things like that. So there's definitely like things to not do, but it's not really discussed at length.
Right. Well, okay. Derrickson, I'm curious, and this is just something I've noticed in the past, I would say like 4 years, but it may have started before then, but that's just my own, because of the media I've been taking in. I've started to see more representation of Native Americans in like TV shows, which has been super cool. The first one that comes to my mind is Reservoir Dogs, which is like amazing on FX. If anybody hasn't seen that, I strongly recommend it. But even a show like Yellowstone, that is super popular right now, has a lot to do with Native American culture and plays a big part of that show. And then I just finished watching 6 seasons of a show called Longmire, which also very heavily takes on a lot of the Native American culture. What has that experience been like, you maybe finally seeing some representation out there in, you know, television?
Yeah, it's definitely shifted since movies started being created with like cowboys and Indians to now. Right. There's definitely like more, not only representation, but actual actors who are Native American playing those parts who traditionally were played by non-Native American people. So it's great to see like that there is a lot of support behind it within the Native community. It's funny that you mentioned Reservoir Dogs, is because I went to high school with the writer and one of the actors in there.
That's so cool. Like, yeah.
I haven't been able to watch it just because like I know their personality, so I can't get their like character
into that world.
Yeah, their character. I'm like, oh gosh.
Wait, what character did they play?
Can you tell us?
Dallas Goldtooth, the guy that comes in the vision.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was great.
I mean, but like he plays a really like satire kind of comedy role, right? Like,
almost. Yeah, but it's like I know his personality, so I can't get into the character. I'm just like, oh gosh.
Takes you out of it.
Is he completely opposite to it, or
I feel like it's pretty much accurate how he goofs off. Like that's how he acts. So it's like hard to take serious.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, and the reason one of the reasons I brought that up is because I wanted to ask you, you know, something that I have seen a lot in those shows where they are including more Native American storylines, is the concept of the meaning of dreams and visions. So was that something that was a big part of your culture growing up as well?
Yeah. So again, I can only speak on the Navajo or Diné, if other Diné people are listening. The Diné side of it is that dreams are definitely messages, or they can be forewarnings. Typically, I mean, sometimes they're super silly, like you might have eaten a late meal or watched something before bed and it could mean nothing, but there's usually a sense of warning when you have a bad dream. Sometimes there's signs in the dreams, like being bitten by an animal or losing your hair or teeth, which are really big indicators that something's wrong spiritually, at that point you would enlist the help of a medicine person.
I get
and
the,
say, this is what I'm going through. What's going on?
I get the teeth dream like so much. I mean, well, not recently, but it used to be like a really big recurring dream, and I hate it. I like wake up and I like have to make sure my teeth are still in my mouth.
Like that, especially if it has to do with your hair or your teeth, because those things are very in Navajo culture, they're protected. You need to make sure they're protected. You always keep your hair up. You don't let it go everywhere. Your teeth are you can take this how you want it, but for us, with losing your teeth, it means someone's praying negatively against you, wishing bad things against you. And so at that point, yeah, you would go to a medicine person and say, I had this dream, and they would try to help figure things out.
Wow. That's pretty.
Yeah. That's something that I kept seeing over and over, you know, in the shows that I always thought was so cool, because we do talk about dreams a lot on the podcast, and we've heard people interpret them in different ways. So I thought, you know, while we had you on, it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on that. So yeah, you emailed in and I thought your story sounded awesome. You want to start taking us through it?
Yeah, sure. So I did not go to school on my reservation. I went to a boarding school in Roe, New Mexico. This boarding school was created by an alum of Dartmouth, who was also inspired by the Native population at Dartmouth College. And so he wanted to give Native students an opportunity to get a great education, go to college, and, you know, whatever they wanted to do. So I left the Navajo reservation and went to this boarding school, which was about, I would say, 2 hours away maybe from where I lived on the reservation. And the boarding school was situated about half an hour out of Santa Fe in the middle of nowhere. So the property itself used to be a retreat center. I believe it was owned by 3M. I could be wrong. I think that's just something that stuck in my mind, but it was basically like a retreat for corporate people. So it was pretty fancy. There were meditation platforms and a swimming pool and jacuzzi and saunas and like all this things that I wasn't used to. But it was situated in a valley, very hidden, very off the beaten road. And the rooms themselves were like kind of like hotel rooms. I don't know if you've been to the Southwest, but like Adobe style rooms. And so that's where I went to boarding school. I didn't find a lot of the information out until after what happened to me. But basically, it was like a battleground from a long time ago, from a tribe that no longer exists, but it was pretty bloody from what I understand. And so I didn't know that until after the incident, and I asked around, but I was a freshman or sophomore, I think, in high school. And it was just a typical school. You go to class, go to study hall, and then go back to your room. I just finished study hall for the evening. And so I was going to go back to my room. We all had roommates. Everyone had just another roommate. The rooms are situated kind of like hotel rooms. So there was two beds. There was like a main living area. And then off to the side, I should have drew something, but you walk in your door, to the left is like the bathroom area. And then to the right is the main area where the two bedrooms are. So that, just like any other night, I finished study hall. I went into my room, turned on the light. There's three main light switches. So the first light switch you turn on is just the foyer. So just the part where you enter is illuminated. So then the bathroom area and the main room are dark at that point. at that time, the sun had already set. It was about, I want to say like 5 or 6 o'clock. So it was dark. My roommate at the time had to go home. So it was just me in the room. Nothing had happened since, like nothing had happened to me at that point at all. Like there were no weird feelings, nothing out of the ordinary. So I just walked in like I always do, turned on the main foyer, went into the main living area with the bedrooms. And I had just turned on the foyer lights on. Nothing else was on. Threw my bag on the backpack and I was like opening my backpack. And then from the corner of my eye, I'm looking down at my backpack. And from the side view, I can see a shadow walk in the bathroom area from one side to the other. And I immediately froze because I know I saw it. Like I definitely saw movement. It was just me in the room. Nothing else was moving and something moved. And the foyer itself was about maybe like 4 feet wide. So I wasn't that far away, but I could definitely see something. And I froze and I was like, what's going on? I looked really quickly to see if my roommate may have returned early, if he had his bags there, whatever, nothing. And so at this point I'm thinking, okay, the guys are playing a prank on me or they're trying to scare me or whatever. So I just kind of continue to go through my bag, trying to play it off. Like, you're not going to scare me. I already saw you. Like 5-10 minutes pass and no sound, no nothing. So I'm like, something definitely moved. And so I didn't make a sound, just like, I think, I don't know, when you're scared, you just try to make the least sound as possible. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make a sound and I kind of like inched my way towards the door. And as soon as I could get like hand length from the door, I ran out of the room, slammed the door behind me and went to our dorm parents' room. He wasn't there. So I was like, great.
Of course, and I didn't wanna, when you need them.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be like the scaredy cat. So I was just like, if someone's in there, I'm just going to go to someone else's room for now and hang out. And maybe they'll leave on their own or get bored or whatever, or come find me. Mm-hmm. So I went to another classmate's room just to like hang out. I didn't tell them at that point. I didn't tell them what I saw. I was just hanging out in there. And after a while, I was like, oh, I have to get back to my room. And so at that point, I kind of had to tell them. I was like, listen, this is what happened. This is what I saw. I need you to come with me back to this room. And at first, they were like, yeah, right. But I don't know, like I was trying to scare them or something. I was like, no, I'm 100% serious. I need you to come with me because I was not going back. So I go back. They're behind me. So they don't even enter the room with me, but they're behind me because I think they were freaked out at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I told them what happened. I told them exactly what happened. And they're like, no, you go. We'll wait right here. So they were like, maybe like 5-10 feet from my front door. So I went by myself. I was like, okay, well, they're standing out there. I'll just do this. I went in again, like normal. It was quiet. Just the foyer light was on. And so I was like, okay, just do it. Just go. And so I went into the little bathroom area, clicked on all the lights, opened the bathroom door, went into the closet, mm-hmm. Nothing was there.
Right.
And so they see that the lights are on in the room. So they come in after me. And I was like, guys, is someone doing this? Like, do you know anything? And they're like, no, we don't know anything. We're all underclassmen. Freshman.
That fear, the thing that makes me think of is like when I see a roach in the bathroom and then I try to get it and I can't find it again. And then I have to leave and get something to smush it. That's the same way I feel when I'm sneaking back into the bathroom. Like it's just going to parachute from the top and give me.
And then you have to stay up all night to find it.
Yes. Yes.
It was creepy. When I saw the movement initially, I just got that body chill. I don't know if you and to make things worse, there's like skylights in the ceiling underneath the bathroom and underneath the foyer. So not only was it like, am I by myself, but then people I see, but you know, there's access to look into the room. So it was just creepy altogether. Yeah.
Part of you think it was a human or a person that had come in?
Initially, I thought it was. I thought it was someone trying to, I thought it was either my roommate or someone trying to play a prank on me and like scare me. Mm-hmm. Just because that happened all the time. People prank each other. After they came in and we looked in the room and we looked under the bed and anywhere there was a place to hide, I was like, all right, I guess I'm okay. And afterwards I sat there and I was like, did I see that? Did I really see that? I like questioned myself at that point. I was like, it must have just been my vision playing tricks on me or something, because I kind of rationalized it for myself. Like, no, nothing's there, whatever. So I get ready, nothing else weird, crazy or weird happened for the rest of the evening. I went to bed, I laid down, and the way our rooms were situated, like I said, they're kind of like old hotel rooms. So there was the main entry where you walk in, turn right, the main living area, and then access to a balcony. So it was like a sliding glass door. And then the two beds were like side by side, literally like a motel room. My bed was the furthest to the sliding doors. So I just went to bed, turned off all the lights. The balcony lights came on automatically. So there was kind of like some residual light coming in, shining in through the balcony. So it wasn't totally dark. Mm-hmm. You could still, once your eyes adjusted, you could kind of like see in the room basically. I went to sleep. I'm a side sleeper. So I slept on my side and I was facing towards the sliding door when I went to sleep. And I don't know what, I forget what time it was, but my eyes, at some point during the night, my eyes just opened. Like I was just instantly awake.
Oh God.
Nothing, like no sound or nothing. My eyes just popped open and I was like, why am I awake? And I was like, okay, let me stretch. So I was laying on my side facing the sliding door, and I was going to roll on my back. And as I started rolling, I felt resistance.
Oh no.
I was like, I felt someone behind me. Like I rolled and my body stopped against something in my bed.
Oh and no.
I was like, at that point, my mind went to like, someone broke into my room. That person who was in here never left. Mm-hmm. Is someone pranking me? Like all these things were through my
mind. It's a really mean prank.
Yeah. And it felt like, I don't know, I was laying there for half an hour. I'm sure it was like a couple minutes, but.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So you didn't like turn around to see if someone was there. You just felt in and froze up.
I was so scared. I was like scared. Like, in, I could not move because I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And so my first instinct was to just pretend to be asleep.
Yeah.
So I closed my eyes a little, like I left one eye open and just kind of like laid there. And I was like, maybe I'm making this up. Maybe I am still dreaming or whatever. And so I waited a couple seconds before I tried to roll over again. And then I was like, okay, let me just do it. And so I moved it just so slightly and it was still there. Like I mm-hmm. could still feel something behind me. And okay, what are my options? Like, what do I do? There's nobody here. And the rooms are very thick adobe walls. So it wasn't like someone could hear me right away.
Right.
And couldn't scream. And it was all open. The rooms were like, there wasn't a hallway. There were just like rooms built side by side, but out. So there wasn't a hallway to go into or anything. It was just open to the elements. You open the door to your room and there's nature. Like, so I was like, anyone could have come in here. So I think, okay, there's a sliding door there. I think I can make it. I think it can jump out of the room and over the balcony because it was all single floor. So
gotcha.
All I would have to do is jump over the balcony and run to our dorm parents' room. And so the blankets were on me. So I thought, okay, whatever is behind me doesn't feel like they're under the covers. It feels like they're on the bed because I can feel them. The sheet or the blanket like had no give. Like you couldn't. I couldn't pull it. It felt like it was stopped. It stopped.
Yeah.
And so I thought, I'm going to throw the blanket over whoever's behind me. They're going to get caught in the blanket. Like all this is happening and I'm going to run out of this door. And I was like, did I unlock it? Can I just pull the door open? Or, or do I have to unlatch the little latch thing? Ah. And so I counted to 10, maybe I counted to 10 a couple times.
So scary.
And threw the blanket, opened the sliding door, jumped out. It felt like it took me 10 years to get out of that room. I just waited because I wanted to see if someone or my classmate would pop out or something. I just felt like there was enough open space that if it was someone I didn't know, I could go somewhere else. And not only that, I wanted to see if my front door would open, because you could see into the room, and if mm-hmm. the front door opened, you would see light coming in from the porch light.
Right.
So you would see the door open. I waited there, and I was like ready to run. Nothing. Door didn't open. No one came out after me. And I don't know what time it was. It must have been like 2 or 3 in the morning. I forget. And nobody else was outside. So I was like, okay, let me go back in. I didn't have my key. I was in my pajamas. I didn't have anything. So.
And you didn't feel like you needed to wake anybody up.
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, there wasn't really nobody left. So I thought at that point I was starting to rationalize again, like, maybe it was just me. Maybe I was on the covers, or maybe I was in such a way that, like, I was going through, like, this isn't real. This isn't.
You were probably in shock. Like, I mean, that's a pretty intense experience.
It just, like, in my mind, I was like, no, this isn't, that didn't happen. Like, that, I'm being crazy. There was nothing behind me. And so I built up the courage and went back in the room. Nothing. I checked everything, turned on all the lights, checked everything again. The door, front door, wasn't unlocked. Everything was empty. Okay. At that point, I did have some cedar with me. I always carry cedar. It's just kind of like a blessing that we have, and we burn it if we need to for protection or praying or whatever. So I burn a little, put it around my room, and I said, okay, I'm going to sleep again. Locked everything up, went back to sleep. And so that was I want to say freshman year, but it could have been sophomore year.
Mm-hmm. And there was nothing when you went back in, there was nothing on your bed. Did you try to like recreate it to see if it felt the same?
Yeah. Like I got in bed and I was like, is there like a dip in the mattress? But it was so, I can still remember, like, it's just burned into my being, like, that feeling of some, I remember pushing a little bit when I rolled, like, just making sure, and it was solid. There was a solid being behind me.
Well, I'm curious, Kat and JJ, if you had to be big spoon or little spoon to a ghost, which one would you choose?
Oh, little spoon. I want to be cuddled.
I think, at that point I was a little spoon.
Oh, no, I don't know.
No, I don't want to be in a spoon drawer with a ghost.
I do know. Did you say spoon drawer?
Yeah, I'm coining that.
Oh, because you put spoons in.
Normally
a drawer.
You put spoons in a drawer. So if you're spooning, is the bed the
I get drawer? It. Makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah, no, but something that did resonate with me was just your thought process for like, okay, well, I got to plan this all out. Is the door locked? Is it not locked? Because my brain is like that with everything these days. And I'm like, why am I overthinking every single process of, okay, well, I got to get up and get to my car, but I got to turn this light on and do this thing for the cat. And it's just like, it's funny because in times of like trauma or emergency, it's nice because it kicks in like that. For one of us in this household, can't not say the same for someone else named JJ.
When you first went into your room before you first saw, you know, this figure, did you like, are you certain that your door had been locked and like, did other people in the hall have a key to it?
No, nobody else had a key except like you and your roommate and the dorm parent. And we were always told to keep our rooms locked. No matter what, just because of valuables. Like I said, everything's open. It was just like an open, there was no hallways to monitor. Everything was just straight out into outside. It was like a little home.
Basically. Also, that would be a horrible prank for one of your friends to play on you.
And that's a real long game prank of laying there till like 3 or 4 in the morning. Like, yeah. Who does that? You know, like and if you were a prank, like, you would wait till as soon as you fell asleep and just be like, oh, boo. Like,
and also you would probably have felt them move or heard them breathing. Did you feel anything like that or just that
nothing.
Pressure?
And that's why I was like, is there someone there? Because yeah, you would hear them breathe. And that's why I checked twice. I was like, roll over, stop. Okay. Waited. And at that point I was 100% awake. Like I was awake. I was like,
did you get again. PTSD from that? Like I would struggle, I think, in the future sleeping after that experience.
So that's where the traditional part steps in. And I feel like a lot of the times when you get help, it gives you peace of mind. So I wasn't like afraid it would happen again, but initially it was just something that I was like, I need help. Yeah. I need something happen to me. And as a Navajo person, when those things happen to you, it's a huge deal. It's like red flag, 911, get something over here. And so it was after that, I did call my family the next day. I was like, this is what happened. And so we had to get some things done for me. But I had asked, I told my friends about it. And at that point, the upperclassmen had joined the conversation. They're like, yeah, that room's haunted. I was like, why didn't you tell me? That's when I got the additional information about that room having experiences from the past, from the first class. Because at that point, the school was only three. If I was a freshman, it was only open for 3 years. If I was a sophomore, two. So it was a brand new school.
Did you change rooms every year or was that your first time in that room?
That was my first time in that room and the last time.
Yeah.
Because I had to stay there for 4 more years. I was like, don't put me in that room.
So it must have been maybe your freshman year.
Yeah. There were upperclassmen. So it had to have been my freshman year because the story that I heard happening to an upperclassman who was a freshman at the time. So the first year the school was open was that he was sleeping in his bed and the beds did not move. They were kind of like bolted against the wall. Mm-hmm. So there was no way to move them. But he was sleeping in his bed and he felt a hand come up over his head and stroke him. And that's how he woke up.
Got chills.
The beds are up against the wall. There's no way to move them.
Stop.
And he said it felt like someone was stroking him like this. And he woke up.
Oh my God.
That is so
creepy.
He
happened to be my roommate the year after. So I got a little bit more information from him.
It's a very sensual spirit that's haunting that room.
Yeah.
So, that's really ironic that he became your roommate the next year.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened, but he told me a little bit more about that place. When the first students first got there, it was rampant with activity. Like there was, people could hear things and see things. There was a ghost that would walk down the road is what I was told. And they had to invite all these medicine people from all the various tribes because that school was the culmination of a lot of Native American people. So not just Navajo, it was Pueblo and Northern Native Americans. So as many of the medicine people that they could get from each tribe came and blessed that school. And then from what I was told that year after, a lot of it just like died down. So
that would make a great documentary, like the visual of all the medicine people coming and like blessing the school and all the stories and everything. That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I still can't get over it. I'm going to sleep with my head under a blanket tonight, probably.
Places on the property that you could go, like the meditation platforms. We weren't allowed on there, but didn't stop us. But at night, if you would go to the meditation platforms and just sit, you could you sit for a few minutes, you would start to hear whispering, like voices whispering. And I was like, no way, that's not true. People are messing with you. I did it. And it was terrifying, and I didn't do it again after that. But yeah, I mean, it was, there was a lot of activity at that particular school. Another story that one of my classmates had is they were walking back in there's like a main concrete road that ran through the school, and the dorms were up against the trees. So just behind the dorms were just trees. Like, it was just like a forest. So that was kind of, in retrospect, maybe a little terrifying, because you're like open to the forest. And but coming from the reservation, I think a lot of us didn't think twice about it, because we all either came from like a wooded area or places that weren't really populated, so it didn't really freak us out. Yeah, one of my classmates, and she was walking back from at night as well, from study hall, and she saw someone standing on top of the dorms. And she thought it was one of her classmates or whatever. She yelled at this being, it didn't move. As she got closer, she said the eye portions of this figure started to not illuminate, but she could see like a glowing. At that point she was like, nope, this isn't a human, and she turned around and went another way. Wow. So it was just things like that are just like matter of fact, like, yeah, this is activity, I need to go somewhere else.
Do you think being a Navajo helped you? Well, I mean, it sounds like it did, that it did help you process that event, because I mean, that's a pretty hardcore supernatural experience you had.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely correct. I think it's just like, it's not something, I love hearing the people's believometers, because I'm like, ooh, if you knew, like, when you grow up in seeing things and hearing things, it's not so much like, is there? It's like, there is. Do I want to be around to be involved in this?
Right. I was going to ask if, because, like, you know, that was just what you guys knew and what you guys were taught, and it was fact to you. Does that mean like you're more susceptible to experiencing those things too, because you're acknowledging it from the start?
Absolutely. I think if you are the more traditional you are, this is just my personal belief, like the more traditional you are, the more open you are to it, just because you have that belief. And so you spend a lot of time making sure you're protected or making sure you're staying in balance. And that's why I like the podcasts and shows like about ghost hunting, because I would love to do it. Like, there's a lot of things that I would love to do, but just coming from my culture, I can't go ghost hunting. Can't do any of that. So, and what? Just to hear and see other people's like experiences, like.
Well, Kat and JJ, did y'all have any other questions?
No, I think I'm good. I'm just a lot to think about as I. A fellow side sleeper try to go to sleep tonight. So
If there's resistance, it's probably me pushing you away. So
Kat, you didn't answer the question. Big spoon, little spoon.
Oh, for a ghost?
Yep.
I guess it depends on the type of ghost. Like, is it sad? Does it need affection? Is it being weird and creepy? You know?
Right.
I don't know. I feel like I'd want to have control of the situation and be the big spoon, maybe.
Nice. I just don't want to get forked. Ha ha. See, I just wanted to get my joke in. That's not great. Oh,
okay. So, wow. That payoff was good for Noah. And nobody else.
It's just like whenever Noah gets forked.
With that, I'm Noah Daniels.
I'm JJ.
I'm Kat.
I'm Erickson.
Ooh. Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.